Hey, everybody, this is Matthew Soltysiak, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions Podcast, part of the Minute Media Podcast Network. This season, it's all grit. I speak with a variety of guests and interview key players, gaining more insight on what makes this team go. The Detroit Lions are now in a new, grittier era, and we look beyond just the kneecap when it comes to the analysis. Welcome to another episode. In this episode, we finish our conversation with Jeremy Reisman from Pride of Detroit. We discuss the roster, the never-ending kicker saga, and we share our optimism for the future. Let's get to it, Lions fans.
This is Jason Gabena, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions Podcast.
Well, let's talk about the team. They've gotten better each year. We've seen that with the record, obviously, 3-13-1, 9-8, 12-5. But more importantly, the talent level in the building is changing. I mean, as I said, there were some good players on the 2021 team. But in general, the total talent level was light years below where they are now. Can you talk about the entire roster improvement over this time, especially the depth and what you've seen take place?
Yeah, I think, honestly, every now and then something hits me in a way that's like, oh yeah, this team actually is very, very good in a way that I'm like, it's obvious, but it's just, I'm not used to seeing those indicators. So when I see them, I'm like, oh yeah, this is what it's like to have a really good football team. And I think the thing is now, and it's literally happening in this moment because we're in the downtime of the offseason. And so what does everyone do? They put out their player rankings or they put out their positional rankings. And like, you look at every single position and the Lions have a top 10 guy at like every single position. I just saw a list today. Lions are considered a top 5 defensive line in the NFL. And I'm just thinking to myself, that's been like the weakness since Sue has been out of town. That's been a weakness even while Dan Campbell has been here. Now the defensive line is considered top 10. The secondary room has a lot of competitors, a lot of, you know, question marks still very much. But at the same time, like, there's a lot of guys that you expect to either grow into talent or be collective starters. You like the linebacker room that's like 5 guys deep. The offensive line is widely considered the best in the NFL. You have a tight end that is already in the top 5 discussion in his second year. You have an offensive tackle that is probably the best in football. You have a running back duo that is considered top 2 in the NFL. Like, you go pretty much every spot of this roster, save maybe wide receiver. But even then, you have a guy who just set the record for contract for 24 hours in Amon-Ra St. Brown. So it's incredible to me that not just that they have, because to me back in the day, it was like they have a decent roster, but they don't have superstars. Now it's, they have superstars everywhere. Like, you have a guy that could potentially be a Pro Bowler, all pro at just about every position. Like, there's very little exceptions to that rule. And that is a level of talent that I don't think is that common. You know, a lot of times when you look at some of these dynasty teams, it's not so much about the depth of talent across the board. I think the Rams are maybe a counterexample of that, where, yeah, they were talented across the board. But a lot of times you're led by a franchise quarterback or a really good offensive line or a really tough defense, but maybe some weaknesses on offense. This is a really, really balanced, strong, top-heavy roster that even has pretty decent depth at certain positions. And so it's weird. Like, it's weird to see that up close and personal, because you even when you like see a talented roster on another team, you don't see them with the level of intricacy as you do your team. And so, because you don't know any other team as well as your team and all the potential, you know, if this guy gets injured, we're screwed here and things like that. And so to me, of course, there are pitfalls where an injury could devastate a unit, just like there is for every other team. But to me, just like the high level of talent at every single position is just, it's incredible, particularly when you think of how far they've come in 3 years. When you know, we talked about it, that 2021 roster, really the only foundation that was there were a couple pieces on the offensive line and almost nothing else. Like, you look at the roster, there's not a lot still hanging around, even from that 2021 team. So for them to rebuild all of that and get to where they are is again, a true testament to the incredible job that Brad Holmes has done.
Well, and going back to, you know, we talked about the draft picks that they got and, you know, how many starters they've gotten out of the draft. Well, it's not just fewer draft picks and it's not just drafting later in the draft. It's you've got some really good players on this roster. So if you're going to become a starter, I mean, you're going to have to be really good. And yeah, the odds of a rookie being a starter have dropped considerably. And if you're an undrafted free agent, the odds of making the roster are that much more difficult.
Yeah. I mean, we were in year one, we were talking about undrafted rookies starting. Now we're talking about, is there room for any of them even on the 53-man roster? And I wouldn't be surprised if like that streak, I know they have a pretty long streak of having at least one UDFA making the roster. It wouldn't surprise me if that comes to an end this year, just because there's not room.
Well, they are coming off their best season in recent memory. So let's talk about what's next. There's a ton of excitement, but before we get to the excitement, let me ask you this. What gives you the most caution going into this upcoming season?
I think honestly, it's just an improving division and conference. It's nothing in the Lions' hands. I know the Lions have certainly gotten better, at least on paper, from where they were last year, but I truly believe that this is going to be a competitive division now. I truly believe that Green Bay is, I mean, we saw how far they got last year, and they were a very young team that were doing a lot of things that the Lions did towards the end of 2022. And so I think you could very much see a 2022 to 2023 type of jump for Green Bay. And that's kind of scary considering they got to the divisional round. Chicago, I think, is starting to do a lot of things that make sense personnel-wise. I still don't love their coaching staff, but defensively, they started to figure things out towards the end of last season. You never know what's going to happen with a rookie quarterback, though. So they're going to be a hard team to beat. The line split with them last year. They probably should have gotten swept by the Bears last year, for being completely honest. So they're not going to be an easy out. And I do think Minnesota is kind of a distant fourth in the division, but they have a lot of offensive talent too. They have one of the they probably have the best receiver in football, and we saw the amount of trouble that he gave the Lions last year. So no easy outs there. I think the Rams have gotten better. I think the 49ers are still a really, really good team. I just think the NFC is starting to catch up a little bit in terms of, you know, it wasn't a great conference last year. The AFC seemingly is very quarterback heavy and talent heavy, but I think it's a little bit more evened out. And obviously the Lions have to play a first place schedule now after winning the division. So schedule is going to be a little bit tougher. They're playing a lot of, you know, night games. And so the schedule is going to be a little bit thrown off of getting into maybe a rhythm for those 1 o'clock games that they used to be able to do. So I just think it's things that are out of their hand, because I have a ton of confidence in the Lions roster, to be completely honest. I think they have enough talent to be a Super Bowl level team, but you could see a step back in terms of overall record just because the surrounding pieces around them have gotten a little bit tougher.
Yeah, I think you hit like the two main things that I was thinking as well, which is one, their division has gotten better. And it could actually be one of the best divisions in football this year, depending how things play out. Now, there are two rookie quarterbacks. You don't know what to expect from either of them. Chicago's defense definitely took a big step forward the second half of the year. Minnesota, they added Aaron Jones. They have a running game this year. We think they will anyway. And, you know, whether it's, you know, Sam Darnold or J.J. McCarthy, it's like, they were putting guys out there like Romeo Doubs last year, and they were competitive. They didn't win all the time. So it'll be a tough division to win. Last year going in, I kind of felt pretty confident we were going to win the division. And this year I think we can, but I'm not going to say we will, because anything can happen. I agree. Also, I like what the Lions have done. I love what we've done with the secondary, and I guess we'll talk more into what we like, but it's what the other people have done around them. The NFC has gotten better. The Rams have made a really quick turnaround that I don't think a lot of people were expecting. Philadelphia might be better this year because, well, even though they fell apart, now they have a really good running back, and hopefully they, for their sake, they figured some things out, maybe not for us. And the Lions do have a tougher schedule. So there is a chance we could be a better team this year and have a worse record. Exactly. Yep. But it doesn't mean we're not as good of a team. And, you know, I forget what the Chiefs record was last year. I want to say it was 10 or 11 wins. And
yeah,
they went to the Super Bowl.
Right. We put out our earlier predictions already for once the schedule dropped for 2024. I picked 11-6 and I got a lot of heat for it, which is, you know, it's taking a one step back in a lot of people's minds. But I made that exact point. The Chiefs were 11-6 and won the Super Bowl. Like, no one was questioning their greatness at the end of the season. So 12 win seasons are hard, man. Like, I think there's a reason why the Lions franchise is you know, that tied a franchise record for wins in the regular season. It's rare. And so, there's no shame in being an 11 win team in the regular season.
No, not at all. Actually, that was my prediction last year, was 11-6. And then we got to the bye week. And I think I don't know if we were 8-2 at the bye or 6-2. Okay, yeah. And I adjusted it to 12-5. I mean, I was, you know, like, oh, let's go up one. We're so far ahead of schedule. And right. It worked out that it was 12-5. But I actually also am thinking 11-6 this year, just from that initial thought is, hey, the division's going to be tougher and the schedule's going to be tougher and whatnot. And again, we could get that and we could be even better. And then once you get into the playoffs, who knows if there will even be a 12 or 13 win team in the NFC this year. It all depends. If everyone's that much better, you're going to have a lot of people splitting some matchups.
No question.
So those are your caution. What gives you the most hope and optimism? I kind of started letting one of mine out of the bag, which is a retooled secondary. I'll get into that in a little more detail, but give me some of your thoughts. What gives you the most hope and optimism?
Yeah, I think you have to start with the retention of your coaching staff. They like we've been saying, you know, they deserve a lot of credit for what's been happening. When you have a roster full of such young players, the reason for their development is often your coaching staff. And, you know, pretty much the Lions have kept everyone across the board except for your defensive line coach and your secondaries coach, which is probably the two areas that needed the most improvement anyway. So all that makes a lot of sense. Ben Johnson coming back makes it feel like the offense isn't going to take a step back, particularly when you're returning four of your five starters and the one starter you lost was replaced with a Pro Bowler. You have to feel pretty darn good. Maybe they're missing a key receiver from last year. And yeah, maybe they're expecting someone like Jameson Williams, who hasn't necessarily proven himself quite yet, to take a big step. But I'm not going to bet against this offensive line. I'm not going to bet against Jared Goff. I'm not going to bet against Ben Johnson. This still screams to me as a top five offense. And listen, this is the NFL in the modern era. If you have a top five offense in this league, you're going to make the playoffs and you're probably going to make some noise. It's just that simple sometimes. And I'm not saying you don't need a good defense. You do if you want to win a Super Bowl, but if you want to win a majority of your games, sometimes even just having a top five offense is enough. And then, you know, not to say like my only source of optimism is the offense. There's a lot as we're about to get to be excited about the defense, which I think started to figure some things out late last year. You know, they still gave up a lot of points. They still let quarterbacks throw 300 plus yards for them. But I think they figured out an identity that works that just needed a talent injection. And I think they got the talent injection this offseason with Carlton Davis, which I still think is somehow an overlooked move. I think it's overlooked because of the draft, right? You get Terron Arnold, you get Ennis Rakestraw, and so you're like, oh, well, Carlton Davis is a one-year plug-in plan. I'm not so sure about that. I think this guy has a chance to be the number one corner this year, and then if Terron Arnold overtakes him as CB1, I think it makes sense to keep Carlton Davis as your CB2 and then work to see where you can fit Ennis Rakestraw on the field, because I think Carlton Davis has legit starting and potential CB1, but you know, long-term potential there, particularly in what the Lions want to do, which is like a lot of press man physical play from your corners. That's what he did best in Tampa. And I think they pulled away from that a little bit, which is why, you know, maybe the PFF scores don't line up with a number one corner or things like that. So to me, it's, I think there's no real reason to expect any step back offensively. Meanwhile, the Lions added a couple really, really exciting pieces on defense that I think could bring them at almost at worst, I feel like, to be an average defense in 2024.
And as we, you know, I talked about last year, if they got to just an average defense last year, watch out NFL. And that's what happened. Right. And, you know, it got us to half of a game away from the Super Bowl. The coaching staff is huge, right? Because when you don't have to put in new offensive coordinators, you don't have to learn new systems, you know, that learning curve for a quarterback can be a process. And, you know, sometimes they promote within and just try and keep it the same. But we've seen it in different teams around the NFL. A successful team loses a coordinator, they bring in another guy, the offense doesn't always, you know, gel the same way. So having the same coaches on offense and defense is big. And I'm going to go with the secondary. That, you know, they're not standing pat and saying we're just going to try and get through. I thought they solved it last year with Sutton and C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Now, you know, those didn't go the way we planned, and those players are no longer here. But I love the trade for Carlton Davis because he's a starter and a good starter, a guy with experience, because you need to have experience. You can't just rely on the rookies. The signing of Amik Robertson actually could pay off really well.
Yeah.
And then you've got the rookies that are going to come in. And yeah, Terrion Arnold could be your number one, whether it's him or you have Carlton Davis. I really like what they're doing. I'm hopeful. I mean, they injected more talent there this year than they have from the draft, all the drafts combined under Campbell and Holmes. So something's got to hit there. And I'm really optimistic it will. Another wild card is Emmanuel Mosley. He comes in. You know, I still think that if Emmanuel Mosley doesn't get hurt, the Lions might be in the Super Bowl. That might be the one piece. And you'll never know. And it's not just one thing. But if he comes back as well, that defense gets that much better. Watch out, NFL. The Lions have a good chance.
I certainly know that the people in the building are not counting out Emmanuel Mosley. Like they believe in him. There's a reason why, even after two consecutive ACL tears, he's still there. He worked his butt off. He was still in the building a ton during last season, you know, through the end of the playoff run. Like he was committed to getting better, to being part of the team, to learning the scheme, all that sort of stuff. And so I think part of that mental preparation hopefully means, you know, it seems like all signs are that he's going to hit the ground running once training camp is here and you know, we'll be there on the field day one, it sounds like, from some of the things Dan Campbell was saying. So he'll be part of the competition. And if there's anything we know about the Lions, they're going to give the job to who wins the competition. It doesn't matter where you're drafted. Doesn't matter what your signing bonus was. If you're playing better in the preseason and in training camp, you're going to be there in week one.
All right. Well, let's talk about kicking. I know it's a topic that can sometimes feel like an allergic reaction, and you know, but there has been, I'm going to call this the kicking saga of the Detroit Lions. The names are Austin Seibert, Riley Patterson, John Parker Romo, Michael Badgley, Jake Bates, James Turner. And there's probably three or four that I have left out that has been in this 3 to 4 year cycle. So let me just kind of bring some stuff up and then throw some questions at you. Hopefully you have some good insight on. Austin Seibert was our kicker in 2021. He gets hurt. Riley Patterson fills in well for him. In 2022, Seibert and Patterson, I think, battled it out. Seibert's the kicker. He gets hurt again. A host of other people fill in for Seibert. We finally settle on Michael Badgley for about 12 games. Patterson had gone to Jacksonville. He's playing over there, going to the playoffs with them and everything. 2023, we trade to get Patterson back to compete with Michael Badgley. Plus, we bring in John Parker Romo because of I think, the distance a guy can kick the football. Yep. Patterson wins the job, but Badgley replaces him with 4 weeks left in the season. Now, Patterson is back with Jacksonville, and we have Badgley. We have signed James Turner, undrafted free agent for Michigan. We have now let him go. He is signed with the Packers. We have signed Michigan Panthers long ball expert Jake Bates. And that's where we're at today. Is that a pretty good summary?
I think you nailed it. Yeah, that's hearing it all in front of you laid out like that. It very much sounds like a circus carousel.
So let me start with the first one, which is Seibert and Patterson. I remember when this was playing out, and I'm sitting here thinking Seibert keeps getting hurt in weird ways, like not on the field, something happening. And Patterson comes in and fills in well for him. So I was surprised that they kept Seibert over Patterson that second year. Any thoughts on that? Any insights that you can give? I know you covered it in practice.
Yeah, as far as I remember, Seibert was like the more consistent guy throughout practices. It was very much a case where like Patterson looked really good in the preseason and when he took over at the end of the previous season, that like what the public saw was a lot different than what the media saw. And so I think a lot of people were surprised that Patterson didn't win, but a lot of people that were at those training camp practices and at OTAs and things like that were just like, yeah, I get why you guys are excited about Patterson, and Patterson did the most of his important opportunities when the opportunity was presented in front of him, but Seibert is a guy that they trusted the most. And I think, to me, with kickers, trust is so important with them that, like, you can have, if you flash in the pan for 4 or 5 games and you're really good, great. But to be a good kicker in this league, you have to have a bigger body of work, because we see kickers all the time, just that they start out well, they have a case of the yips, and then, like, they never recover from them. And so, yeah, that it was a weird, I understand, like, the order of operations of, like, going from Seibert to Patterson and then back to from Patterson to Seibert looks weird, but at the time it did make sense.
Okay. And so then ultimately we settle on Patterson. But then we have Badgley come into the picture here, and the Lions actually traded back for Patterson, even though they had Badgley, and those two competed.
Yep.
And Patterson was chosen over Badgley to start the 2023 season. And before we get too much more into these questions, I want to just throw up some other research I just kind of found.
Sure.
If you look at Detroit Lions' field goal percentage, and again, stats can be the biggest lie, right? You can use them to, prove a lot of points. But Michael Badgley's career kicking percentage as a Detroit Lion is 85%, and Riley Patterson's is 90. They are the top two, not counting, Bob Thomas and Dutch Clark. Matthew Prater's is at 84%, and Jason Hansen's is at 82. Obviously, Prater and Hansen have much larger bodies of work. But both of those guys, Badgley and Patterson, are not bad. And I also point out, Michael Badgley, did you know in his rookie year, he kicked a 59-yard field goal?
Yeah.
He does, I know that he's got more leg strength than Patterson. But he's done well. Neither of them seem to be that bad. I mean, proof is in the pudding, I guess, with Jacksonville, who traded away to get McManus, but now they brought Patterson back. And so is it Badgley's job? Well, let's go back. Why did they choose Patterson over Badgley? Was it the better consistency they thought from short range? And then why did they make that change 4 games left in the season?
Yeah, it's really kind of a fascinating situation. And I think, again, it speaks to the Lions' commitment to the better guy winning the job. And so I think Patterson legitimately lost. Badgley legitimately lost to Patterson in training camp. Like, you take the data of training camp and Badgley, I'm going to get this mixed up a bunch, and Patterson was legitimately the best kicker. But what was interesting is that kicker competition continued into the season. And so when they made that kicker change, I don't remember if it was Dan Campbell or if it was Dave Phipp who told us, but said, like, this was a competition that we've been running for the past 3 or 4 weeks in practice, because we haven't necessarily, I mean, we have these two kickers on our roster. We want to make sure we have the best guys out there for the final regular season push. And so we challenged these guys for the past 4 weeks to basically another kicker competition mid-season. And I know that sounds unconventional, and I'm not sure how conventional it is. I had never heard of anything like that, but they essentially said, like, Badgley won it out. And like, we have to reward the player for how they practice. That's important to us. That's our identity. That's how you get people working their hardest in practice and getting better. And so he wins the mid-season kicking competition, goes out and makes a huge kick in the Rams game, a 54-yarder at that. And it's funny you point out those percentages, because they're even kind of surprising to me, because you think of the Lions kicker, situation, and you think it's been chaos. And in a lot of ways it has, just in the ways that they've been funneling through guys, but the kicking itself hasn't really suffered all that much. Like, I think we can think to specific examples of, Badgley as a kick that comes up short from 51 yards, or, I don't even remember who the kicker was in the Minnesota game from 2022 in Minnesota, where, Dan Campbell makes the tough decision to send out the kicker from 54 yards. And I think that kick came up short. And so I think there's also, like, something that's just, like, viscerally angrily when a kicker comes up short, especially if it's not, like, if it's from 60 yards, you can understand it. But, like, if your kicker comes up short from 55 or under, you're like, this guy shouldn't be an NFL kicker. But at the same time, this team very much values consistency from 49 and under. And they've been getting that from the guys. Even if they've been shuffling through them, pretty much everyone who's been out there has been pretty consistent from that distance. And so it's maybe not the crisis that I think some fans make it out to be, but it's also clear that the Lions are not going to stand pat either. They're going to continually make that kicker position something that is continually earned, and they're not going to shy away from opportunities to maybe improve at it.
Well, you know, I think part of it is just the rotation, you know, of how many people have gone in and out. There was that season where after an injury went down, we had like 3 or 4 guys in 5 weeks, and we missed half our field goals, which cost us a bad game.
True.
But also, we're looking for the next Eddie Murray, the next Jason Hansen, the next Matt Prater. I mean, that is a position there has been longevity at. And so I think that is part of it. And, you know, I wanted Patterson to be that guy. But, I mean, I'm watching the Monday night football game against the Raiders, and I think he missed an extra point and a field goal in that game. And when he misses an extra point, I'm like, oh, come on, man. Like, we can't be doing that because – you know, then it opens the door up and stuff. And so, but Mike Badgley came through. He came through again. And you said, you know, he was on the practice squad. They were competing all season. And, you know, he hit that field goal against the Rams. That was big. I still remember the guy behind me being like, oh, great. What are we doing? And I'm like, dude, you got to have faith, man. And, like, you know, he just kind of will that thing through. But now let me ask you, I mean, is this Badgley's job now? You know, they brought Jake Bates in. Now, when Jason Hansen was here, Matt Prater came in, you know, because you had a second guy in camp. And then obviously we knew we were keeping Jason Hansen, and Prater got signed by the Broncos. Is this simply an opportunity for Jake Bates to be a second leg in camp? Is this probably a legit battle? I mean, Badgley does have experience. How are you reading this situation? And then the quick departure of James Turner, was that just a victim of circumstance with Jake Bates?
Yeah, I'll start with the second one there, because I feel like the Lions went through something a little bit similar last year when they, you know, they decided to add John Parker Romo from the XFL. You know, they came out and they said, like, I think at the time they had to release Badgley. And so the decision was made there because they thought Badgley and Patterson had kind of a similar skill set. They, you know, they were both guys that didn't necessarily have big legs, but were relatively consistent from shorter distances. And so there wasn't much of a point in keeping both. They'd rather have a long distance kicker go against a medium range kicker. And so, like, that's kind of what I think was happening here. Like, in this case, they had two long distance kickers. They had James Turner from Michigan, and they brought in Jake Bates. And so they're like, well, we don't need two long distance kickers, two guys that have never played in the NFL, two guys that we don't know if we can trust in the long term. Let's decide on one or the other and have them compete with Badgley come training camp. And so I think that's why they made the decision that they did. I thought James Turner looked pretty darn good in OTAs. Not 100% consistent, but I guess the allure of Jake Bates was a little bit too much. You know, he's kicking literally in Ford Field. He made the 64 yarder to win the season opener, so he can kick under pressure. You don't get to necessarily simulate that in OTAs, right? That's something that's always the special teams coordinators are always talking about. Like, it's really hard to simulate those in-game high pressure reps when you're in a practice field in July, right? It's just really hard to replicate that. So maybe just seeing Jake Bates having been in those moments and kicking long distance. Not that, you know, James Turner obviously had a couple big kicks at Michigan, right? They played him at the highest stage. So he's not a stranger to the moment, but I think there's just something about Jake Bates that was a little more alluring. Now, as to whether this is an actual competition now, I think it absolutely is. I do. I think the Lions have certainly showed in the past that they are not afraid to change kickers, change directions when the opportunity arises. But I do think it's Michael Badgley's job to lose again, because I think it's that trust factor. It's the fact that Michael Badgley has been in the league for 6 years. He's been the Lions kicker for a year and a half, a season and a half at this point. And he's done a relatively good job. Now, the long distance stuff isn't necessarily there, but I think the Lions will take a little bit of peace of mind from 49 and under rather than a bit of a wild card in Jake Bates. Now, again, I think they're going to give him a legitimate chance, and I do think they're going to let the data speak for itself. If Jake Bates is clearly the more accurate kicker in training camp, he's going to be the Lions kicker in 2024. But I do think he's going to start from behind, and so he's going to have to prove I think not only a little bit better, I think he's going to have to prove to be significantly better than Michael Badgley to win the job.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on because, again, Badgley was a free agent at the end of the season. Nobody else swooped in to make him a big offer or anything. And, yeah, I'm hoping that we kind of figure it out and have a good kicking season and we don't have to talk about kicking so much. That was quite an epic kicking conversation. I promise not to go down one of those roads ever again for anyone listening. But now you understand the circus merry-go-round that it's been for the last few years. And hopefully everything becomes a little bit more crystal clear.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a long-term option there because it's funny that like when the Lions were bad, that was the one thing you could always rely on is having these long-term kickers. And now that they're good, it's a kicker carousel. Like, why can't we have both at the same time?
I know. We actually, I met Jason Hansen after one of the games last year and I said, any chance you kind of want to come help us out here? Like, just give us some consistency again.
Be nice.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.
Well, okay, let's talk about the roster, the current roster state. We talked about, you already brought it up, you know, how hard it is for an undrafted free agent to make the team, but also for how a drafted player to get playing time. And I want to go back to last year's draft. You brought up Broderick Martin already. We also have Colby Sorsdell. Couple draft picks from last year. They were not expected to be impact players right away. They were drafted for their potential. Now, what are we expecting from them this year? Are we expecting some more playing time? Could they be very impactful as backup players coming in on the lines, or are we still a little bit ways away from seeing them being, you know, a consistent quality impact player? I know we saw some from Colby last year pressed into emergency play. What are you seeing on those guys?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to make any bold proclamations at this point, because unfortunately both those guys play line positions, which is very, very hard to assess during OTAs and minicamp when the pads aren't on. So I can't be like, wow, Broderick Martin looks like a completely different player out there. And now, you know, he got a little bit slimmer and you know, the Lions coaching staff is talking him up a little bit, but it sounds like, you know, he's still very much going through the process of being technically sound, you know, of the pad level still being kind of brought up as something he needs to work on and the way he uses his arms. And so I think there's still going to be some bumps along the way. He's going to get more opportunities, I think, just by where the roster is on the interior defensive line. It's obviously going to help having DJ Reader in the room, someone who's already given him a lot of feedback. And that's something that I think the Lions have generally done a really good job of, is pairing their young players with a good, smart, hardworking veteran that can help them develop quicker. And so I think he's going to benefit from that. I wouldn't go into 2024 with like huge expectations for Broderick Martin, but he's going to get the playing time. And so that to me is critical to his growth too, right? Like, he has to be out there. He wasn't even out there last year. He had like one or two games where he'd logged any snaps. Just being out there as a small rotational player, you know, 10-15% of snaps is kind of what I'm expecting on the regular for him. And so, you know, it's not going to be a ton. I'm not going to expect a 7-sack season out of him or some sort of explosive year out of him, because I think, you know, the guys directly in front of him, DJ Reader and you know, even some of the reserves beyond him, I think might get some opportunities ahead of him, but it's a process. The Lions are willing to take it long. And listen, like, I know Lions fans are going to get impatient. Everyone gets impatient in the middle of the season. But you just have to look to the history of this team. Like, year three is an acceptable year to break out under this regime. We saw it with Fatu Melifanu. We saw it with Derek Barnes last year, right? It happens. Some players develop slower than others. And when you're taking someone from William and Mary, it's going to take even longer. So be patient with him. Colby Sorcel is a really interesting one for me because he did get some of that experience his rookie season. He's moving. It seems like he's moving back to the tackle position, which is something he did in college. And I think there's an opportunity for him to potentially win the OT3 job. I know the Lions, they like Dan Skipper a lot, but we also know what Dan Skipper offers, which is he's kind of okay as that sixth offensive lineman, but he's not really great as a potential starter. Now, obviously some of that is just because it's a huge step down from either Taylor Decker or Penei Sewell. Those guys are fantastic. But I think Colby Sorcel is a guy that, like, I could see make that jump. Now, obviously, if you're OT3, it's not going to look like anything on game day because you're only in those jumbo packages. But I think it might give the Lions a little bit of peace of mind if they can get him to a spot where they feel a little bit more comfortable with their offensive tackle depth. Because a guy like Giovanni Manu, don't expect to see him at all in 2024. He's a guy that you might not see at all in 2025. That's an even longer term project. So I think Colby Sorcel is a guy that maybe you see if the Lions need a desperate, you know, if God forbid one of their tackles gets injured. I think that's maybe where you see Colby Sorcel get a little bit more trust with his team in his second year.
And you'll expect, though, like, if he does come in, you're going to see a higher level of play than you saw from him a year ago.
I would hope so. I think in general, you know, the game slows down for you in year two. I think even getting some of that guard experience probably helps him understand the philosophy of what they're trying to do, even if he is back at tackle. And then maybe it is a little bit like sliding back into, you know, on right back onto the bike, moving back from guard to tackle where maybe he's more comfortable. I mean, we'll see. But again, like, I can't base anything what I saw in the spring because it's too much, you know, underwear Olympics, as they like to say.
That makes a lot of sense. All right. Well, you know, we think the Lions have done things right. And the two areas, I guess, if we're looking at the roster that get the most attention for possible need, at least from what I have heard, are potentially wide receiver and safety. Now, you know, Brian Branch could be moved back to that safety position. And if he does, then maybe that need goes away. You could always have depth. And they lost so many people at that position that it makes you wonder about that. But if he does move back there, that depth could be an issue, but you still have, you know, three good players there. And maybe he's taking a much larger number of snaps at the safety position. Wide receiver. Let's go. Well, first off, you know, tell me, do you agree with the defense position on safety? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was actually just talking to this with Eric Schlitt from Pride of Detroit as well. And yeah, like, I get some of the concerns at safety because, yeah, you did lose just a lot of bodies there this offseason, right? A lot of guys that maybe not necessarily were playing well, but like, if Tracy Walker is your safety four, you're probably okay with that, right? Like, that's a good place for him. And if he has to play in a pinch, you're fine with that. But yeah, on paper, if Brian Branch is moved to safety is more of a permanent thing than just a part-time thing on paper, I don't think it looks too bad to have Kirby Joseph, him and Ifeatu Melifanu as your three deep safeties. That looks kind of okay to me. And even, you know, having someone like CJ Moore as your four is not the worst thing in the world. He obviously provides a ton on special teams and has at least a little bit of playing experience back there. So that doesn't sound that bad. Now, at the same time, we're talking about Brian Branch playing a new position. We're talking about Ifeatu Melifanu only having like six games proof of concept at safety. And we're talking about Kirby Joseph, who maybe took a little bit of a step back in year two. And so there's reasons to believe that maybe it doesn't work out perfectly. And when you're constantly shuffling the seats of some of these guys, there's also going to be kind of an acclimation period, right? Like, if there's a really good chance that if you could, you know, the Lions are in nickel, so there's five defensive backs. There's a very good chance that four of those guys are going to be new from where they were playing last year. That's going to take some time to develop that chemistry. That's like a big talking point last year, right? Is like CJ Gardner-Johnson is here and he's really helping with their communication and he's being really vocal out there. Well, those same concerns now are going to exist when you have two new starting outside cornerbacks. You might have a new starting nickel if Brian Branch is in safety. If Brian Branch is at safety, that's a new spot at safety. And then you have, I guess, probably Kirby Joseph as the one returning guy that's actually out there. So that doesn't all come together overnight. So if that's your, like, I think the overall scope of the secondary, I think the talent level is raised, but I think there's also some concern that we're not sure how some of these young players are going to play out either at new positions or their first year in the NFL. And the chemistry aspect of it is something that I think there is at least some legitimate concern to.
Yeah, there's going to be a ton of youth back there. Because I'll admit, a year ago, I was really excited about the new look secondary and had a lot of high hopes.
Yeah.
And again, injury and just things didn't communicate the same way. And you're going to have to work on that communication aspect and how well will they all work together. So I also like the fact that you brought up that if Brian Branch is going to safety, well, that's a new position for him. And so there's going to be learning moments in that one as well. So let's switch over to wide receiver then. You know, a lot of people are thinking Donovan Peoples-Jones is the key guy. He's the person that's going to be to fill the Josh Reynolds role. What are your thoughts on that? Is there too much pressure on him to do that? Are you liking Antoine Green and his development? Those seem to be the top guys to be wide receivers, I guess, 4 and 5 at this point.
Yeah. I kind of went into spring practices thinking it was Donovan Peoples-Jones's job to lose as kind of that X receiver, outside receiver that the Lions clearly have a game day need for. You know, the guy's had an 800 yard season in the NFL. It was just a couple of years ago, and that's with Cleveland Browns quarterbacks throwing to him, which haven't been good in the past. So, you know, I think he has the physical tool set to take over that job. And we know that it takes a little while to develop that chemistry with Jared Goff. You know, it wasn't there right away with Amon-Ra St. Brown. It wasn't right. I mean, the only guys it seems to ever be like there from the get-go are tight ends for whatever reason. Like it was clear when TJ Hockenson was here, he was going to become a favorite target. And then obviously Sam Laporta hits the ground running last year. But what kind of surprised me a little bit is when both those guys were healthy, both Antoine Green and Donovan Peoples-Jones were healthy during spring practices. It was mostly Antoine Green repping with the first team. And so that kind of tells me either they are putting him in that position because they want to give him an opportunity to win the job, or he might just be ahead of Donovan Peoples-Jones at this point. And so, you know, I think Brad Holmes this offseason has talked up Antoine Green as someone who kind of developed behind the scenes a little bit where we didn't get to see. We don't get to see the full practice during the season. So if someone progresses behind the scenes there, we don't really get a sign of it unless they do it on game day. And Green just didn't get those opportunities much last year. So I'm starting to think that it's kind of his job to win or to lose at this point, maybe both, right? His job to win and lose during training camp. I can't say I saw anything like transformative during spring practices. He didn't get a ton of targets from Goff when he was with the ones because he loves Amon-Ra St. Brown. He loves Sam Laporta, and they're clearly trying to work J-Mo into the offense a lot more than he's been used to. So not a ton of opportunities for Green, but at the same time, if you're just looking at production level, you don't have a ton to replace Josh Reynolds. Like it's 500, 600 yards. If J-Mo takes over, I don't know, half of that, then you're only talking about 300, 400 yards. It's just a matter of this is a guy that's going to be out there 70, 80% of the time, right? Even if the ball isn't coming his way, he still has to make sure he's doing all the other stuff, all the little stuff that Josh Reynolds was really good at, the run blocking, the route precision, the never giving up on a play sort of thing. That's what I think they're going to be looking for at this X receiver position. And that's how you're going to separate yourself. It's not necessarily from getting 200 yards in the preseason. It's making sure you're following your assignments. You're being active in the run game and all those kind of like minimal things that people tend to overlook.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen it even, early last year with Jameson Williams running down the field and blocking for David Montgomery's 75 yard run, that it's everything to make that receiver. Are Lions fans overly concerned about the wide receiver position? Is there a reason to be concerned? Because, I brought up on one of my previous shows that, maybe the Lions are just changing it all, right? It's, Jahmyr Gibbs is an offensive weapon,
right?
And, Sam Laporta is an offensive weapon. And so if you're adding all these different guys that can do all these overlapping things, are we just going with an all-out attack from wherever versus knowing that they're lining up at the X, Y, and Z positions? or what are your thoughts on the receiving core as a whole? I mean, are we just spoiled and we just want more? I mean, how is it?
It's tough to say. I think there's at least a little bit reason for legitimate concern, because you're not only hoping that this X receiver comes out and of this competition we're talking about, but you're also hoping for a pretty significant jump from Jameson Williams. And listen, he ended the season much better than he started it. And yeah, there was definitely signs of progress in the spring as well. But I think the problem that the Lions are bound to run into with the guys that they know they can trust, Jahmyr Gibbs, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Sam Laporta, all those guys attack the middle of the field. That's where they do their bread and butter. They need someone to keep the defenses honest at the perimeters. And so who are those guys going to be? One has to be Jameson Williams, and he still very much has to prove he's capable of doing that on a consistent week-to-week, down-to-down basis. And the other is the guy that wins this battle at the X receiver position. And so they do have a ton of weapons. The problem is a lot of them do attack the same part of the field, I guess, is the problem. Now, can Ben Johnson get creative with all these other guys? Yeah, of course he can, and he will. And it certainly sounds like we're going to see a lot more of Jahmyr Gibbs lined up out wide, whether it's outside or in slot or whatever. Like, we're going to get a lot more of that, and that should help ease the burden from Josh Reynolds a little bit. But I think they're still going to rely a lot on these other two kind of unknowns, Jameson Williams and the X receiver. And so in order to keep defenses a little bit more honest, in order to make sure they can get these other guys open, they're going to have to prove that Williams and the X receiver can be legitimate threats. And those are they're just unknowns at this point. It doesn't mean that Lions don't have the guys. It just means we're not sure that they're the guys yet.
That makes a lot of sense, because yeah, we still don't quite know what we have, especially in, you know, Donovan Peoples-Jones and Antoine Green. So it will be interesting to see what comes from that. I don't know if defensive back, secondary, or wide receiver is your answer to this question, but my question is, of all the areas on the Lions team, what area do you think has the biggest area of possible vulnerability?
Yeah, man, because I have so much faith in the offense figuring out, it's probably not on the offensive side of the ball. It's either what I was mentioning, like the chemistry and maybe coming out a little slow in the secondary, or I think they still have a lot to prove in terms of a pass rush too, right? It's not something we've talked a lot about tonight, but Aiden Hutchinson, obviously a stud. They're really excited about him. Adding DJ Reader, I think, is going to help bring an interior pass rush, which is something that is going to directly help Aiden Hutchinson, and in general, just bring much more of a urgency to the quarterback position, which in turn helps the secondary. But that opposite side is still very much a huge question mark. Is Josh Pascal going to take that year three jump that we were talking about? Is Marcus Davenport going to be healthy enough to provide a little bit of a boost? Maybe do the Lions get something out of Matthew Betts? There's a lot of interesting bodies out there at the edge position. Josh Pascal, another guy. So there's so many different guys that could emerge and be that guy, but none that I'm 100% confident in, or even like 80% confident in, that can bring a consistent pass rush opposite Aiden Hutchinson, so that your secondary isn't holding on for 3, 4, or 5 seconds.
That makes a lot of sense, because we talked about how good the defensive line was against the run last year, and they were amazing against that, but they did lack that pass rush. And it, you know, DJ Reader could be that key piece if they can get that push up the middle, or Aleem McNeil continues to grow. So, all right. Yeah. I'm going to, you know, agree with you on the whole idea of the defensive side of the ball is the one that's got the biggest vulnerabilities at this point, just because we haven't seen them succeed at the level the offense has. And the offense, you know, yes, we lost Jonah Jackson, but we replaced him with another very high quality player. And we also have Donovan Peoples-Jones, who could grow into the Josh Reynolds role.
Exactly.
So the Lions have some salary cap space. And, you know, it's easy for fans to say we should, you know, go get this guy or go get that guy. And, you know, there are a lot of people that Lions wanted to trade for. And let me just tell you how thankful I am. We did not give up, you know, draft picks to pay very high contracts to people we didn't know much about. And so, right. you know, Carlton Davis is kind of that exception. But, you know, the experience he brings to that secondary is going to be something that you can't draft. And that's going to be a big difference maker, I think, this season. But if the Lions were to go and sign a free agent, because there's some talented guys out there, not necessarily wide receivers at this point, I don't think, but there are some, you know, in the safety position or just any area. If there was a free agent, you don't have to say a player's name, but maybe a position you think the Lions would maybe consider bringing in, would it be another backup quarterback to go along with Hendon Hooker? Would it be another defensive lineman to add to the pass rush? Would it be a safety? Because we know there's multiple safeties out there, or something I didn't even name.
Yeah, it's a tough question to answer because, as we've been saying for you know, the past hour or hour and a half or whatever, it's a really good roster. There's not a lot of space, not only in terms of starting capable guys, but even on like the 53-man roster, it's hard to see a lot of jobs available. And obviously you can always get better at every position, so I don't want to discount that. But the question is there an upgrade out there? And if you look at individual talent out there, I think, yeah, you said it, like there's a couple of really, really good safeties still out there. If you could, there's still some guys out there in the UFL you could tap. Hakeem Butler is a guy that I've kind of advocated, the wide receiver that you know, that video went viral of Wade Phillips saying, like, I'm going to tell NFL coaches, like, you belong to be playing there. Had a really good season in the UFL. Could be maybe an upgrade, or at least someone that could challenge for the exposition here in Detroit, or a roster spot. I don't know if there's one particular position, though, that I'm like, the Lions have to add there. I mean, I'd love more offensive line depth, but you're not going to find it at this point in the offseason. Like, I think every team would love more offensive line depth that they can trust. But truth of the matter is there aren't enough for five starters on every team. So your chance at finding a good depth offensive line player is pretty low at this point. So I kind of go back to those positions we just talked about. You know, if you can find a safety that can maybe provide a little bit more of a veteran presence in the safety room, because your oldest safety is Kirby Joseph, I think, maybe, which it's crazy to say. If you can find a wide receiver that fits what you want, or if you can find a pass rusher, really from any position, but I think particularly from the edge, I think that would do the Lions the best. Otherwise, I think the Lions are in pretty darn good spot elsewhere.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where fans are always like, what's that one extra player that can put us over the top? But this has got to be one of the most solid rosters that we have seen in years in Detroit. And the thing that separates us now from like the team with Stafford and Calvin and Sue is we know the defense isn't about to fall apart due to contracts and players leaving.
Right.
We're built up, and we just saw in the offseason the Lions, you know, share that same vision by re-signing a lot of these key guys.
Yeah. And
Jeremy, go ahead.
I was just saying the last thought on the cap space too is like, this is a team that's going to be in a position to win a championship and is going to have that mentality all throughout the entire season. So I think it makes sense to hold on to most of that cap space. And then once the trade deadline comes around, maybe injuries have hit you at a particular position, or maybe it becomes clear that a really good player on a bad team is available. Maybe that's when you're going to actually really, really want that cap space and make an aggressive play for a player out there midseason. Now, midseason additions don't always work, and there's obviously a acclimation period for anyone at any position that just joins a team like that. But I think that might be, you know, everyone that's like eager to use all this cap space, I think maybe holding on to it, potentially using it there or rolling it over to next year. Like, it's not a case of if you don't use it, you lose it. Carried it over to next year, and there are a couple of players that are about to become very costly on the Lions roster anyways, that maybe that cap space becomes very handy.
Yeah, I love the idea of using it for more extensions to homegrown talent that it could be used for. And, you know, Lions wanted a big move in the trade deadline last year. Lions fans did, and they got Donovan Peoples-Jones, and they were hoping for something more than that. But you got to keep that in your back pocket if it's there, because the Rams got Odell Beckham Jr. and like 5 days later, Robert Woods tears his ACL. And so if OBJ is not there, they're not winning the Super Bowl. I'm pretty confident of that statement. They might not even make it there because he had some key plays in the playoff run that got them there. So, yeah, being prudent with it and maybe not, you know, being you know, an overzealous fantasy football player or, right. you know, commissioner who's like, how can I quickly build up this roster? Save a little bit just in case you need it. So, well, Jeremy, we have covered a plethora of topics in this conversation. Are there any final thoughts you'd like to share?
Just that, man, like, as we were kind of talking about when we were talking about the Rams game, like, just I urge everyone to enjoy the ride of this season because it does feel like could be something special. But even if it's not, like, let's not lose sight of the fact that this team has come from a really long place. Let's not take for granted that now they are a legit Super Bowl contender. So even if they fall short of that goal, we're in an era of Lions football that most Lions fans of the past 60, 70 years have never really gotten to truly experience. And so just kind of sit back and enjoy the ride and try not to be too stressed about it, even though obviously the stakes are going to be a little bit higher than they have in the past.
That is for sure. And that's the thing I tried to remind people last year, even, was enjoy this ride. You know, I'm not saying you have to be positive and optimistic all the time, but I'm just not being overly critical because this is so much better than anything we have seen. And so enjoy it, have fun with it. And like Jeremy said, if you have the opportunity to travel to one of those other stadiums and help in the takeover, man, I went to a couple road games last year. I'm hoping to go to a couple this year. It's a fun experience, and it might even be easier to get into than getting into Ford Field this year.
Yeah, cheaper for sure.
Well, Jeremy Reisman, folks. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining the show. You can find all of his work at prideofdetroit.com. Again, I highly recommend you check it out. Jeremy, anything else you want to do to kind of talk about your work or promote yourself?
Oh, no, not at all. I think you did a great job. Just head to prideofdetroit.com and enjoy the community there. It's a cool community too. The comment section is super active, and we're always trying to interact and find new ways to reach out to our fans.
Awesome. Jeremy, thank you so much again. And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. You can find more episodes and content at notthesameoldlions.com. If you're listening on YouTube, please hit that like button and subscribe while you're at it. Tell your friends about the show. And until next time, stay gritty, my friends.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.